Perfect Stranglers contains graphic and explicit content suitable for mature listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi everyone, you're listening to Perfect Stranglers. My name is Kylie.
And I'm Bree.
So we're back for one night only. Yep. We sound like strippers. We sound like exclusive strippers.
Yeah.
That's what how I feel.
High-end
sex workers. We also have a special guest. This is my husband, Steven.
Hello.
Hey.
I'm Steven.
The last time Strangler Nation, in my mind I call him Strangler Nation, the last time we talked, I was talking to a guy who had a motorcycle, and then we ended the podcast.
Yeah.
And I ended up marrying the man with the motorcycle.
Sweet.
And he's going to join us today.
I am the man with the motorcycle.
Yeah, three of them now.
Awesome. Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
I love this.
I know, it's wild. It's a wild time.
Yeah, for sure.
So he proposed the day after I lost my job, which is another wild time for me. Because I lost, and like in between all of, since the Stranglers have stopped, and now we're recording one episode, a lot has happened. Lost a job, got a new job, got married. It's been wild. So Bree, did you buy a new house? Is that what we're seeing right now?
Yeah, this is my new house. Has a great space to record in.
I don't.
Because I'm back in the back bedroom, and so now that we don't do the podcast
anymore. He has a great space. You remember hiding in closets? Remember when I had to hide in my closet and my neighbors came by when we were doing John Wayne Gacy and they brought flowers because I heard them having sex at a party the night before?
Yep. I do.
Oh my God.
I do remember that.
Freaking awful. I never want to go back to living in an apartment again.
Yeah. Those were the days, right?
Those were the days. Do you have anything to say, Stephen, before we start this?
I think I'm ready for this.
Do you know how Bree knows me?
I do not.
Bree, do you want to tell him how you've... He refuses to listen to any previous episodes of the podcast because, in his words, I talk about former lovers.
Oh, no. Hang on. Pump the brakes here.
I mean...
You strongly suggested that I not listen to your amazing podcast because you did not want any issues to develop in our now marriage. So, full warning, I have never listened to an episode of the show before, but I have heard all about it.
Is the warning warranted?
I don't know.
I feel like I talk more about my embarrassing moments more than anything.
Yeah, and like the alien books you used to read.
Alien
yes.
books? What?
Yes.
Like
yes.
alien books. Erotica.
Oh, yes, oh yeah.
Ice Planet Barbarian.
Oh yeah. Our second date, she told me about the blue dicks or whatever.
Yes, with like, the spurs so that hits the clip.
Yeah. Like yeah. it was.
I'm still reading smut. Still doing it. Still going on strong.
Yeah,
you
like,
know?
Oh, that kind of sounds like a sexy Molly Hatchet album cover.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's
this
great.
This will work. This is great.
It's great.
And here we are.
Oh yeah. How I Know Bree. Beauty school.
Yep.
We were the two Brazilian wax models, weren't we?
Yes. This is true.
Yep. So everyone got to take a rip off of us.
college.
That's exactly it. Everyone got to take a rip of wax off right off of us.
Yeah. Even Tim.
Tim didn't do me.
No, he didn't. No, actually, I don't remember. I don't remember.
I don't think they let the boys in.
Well, Tim has waxed me.
I don't.
Anyways.
Well, yeah. I don't think they let the boys in there, though, because there was, wasn't there like Eric and then there was Tim?
Yeah, maybe, but I don't know. I don't know if that was, because I think we didn't care, though. We said we didn't care. I don't know. We'll have to ask Tim.
I don't remember. I do remember everyone just being shocked that my pubes were actually red.
The carpet matches the drapes.
Yes, everyone was like, wow, it's red. I was like, no fucking shit. Look at my head. And that's what I remember most vividly about that moment.
Yeah. So.
So yeah, that's how we meet each other.
This is probably about like the fifth time we've talked about that on this podcast, though.
It always circles back to pubes.
I know, right?
I'm happy to take this walk with you both down memory lane.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you remember the random pube that I had floating around my apartment and we didn't know where it came from? Because it was...
Yes.
It was dark. It was dark colored, and I randomly found a pube in my apartment. It was so weird.
The look on his face. He's like, I don't know what to
I don't
say
know where
about
it came from. It had to have came from my vents, but it was a mystery. Yeah. It was a mystery pube that we had, and it would keep coming back up.
Some guy's just breaking into your apartment and leaving a single pube as his calling
card. I don't know. It's weird. I think it came from the vents.
God, I wonder if the carpet matches the drapes. I'm going to leave his calling card right here.
It was brown. If it was like a coarse green hair, I would have been a little more suspicious. Should we get started on the actual stories or else this episode's going to be 2 hours long?
Right. So what did you research?
So
Wait. We should maybe first say, like, why we're doing this.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden.
Okay. So, Steven saw that I still had my microphone, and he was like, let's record a podcast. And I was like, of what? He's like, I don't know. What if we do Perfect Stranglers? This isn't exactly what he said, but we're just going with it. And I was like, I guess I could, like, jokingly ask the girls if they want to do it. And so I asked you all, and you said, yeah, we could do it for like the holidays. And so that's why we're doing one episode, is because Steven made a joke and now we're here.
Yeah. And it's a little less professional, at least on my end. Yeah. Because you might see there's a dog whining outside my door. Everyone knows I'm podcasting, but apparently they don't care. So if you hear a dog scratching at the door or something, it's just my dog. I can't let her in because she'll like start like chewing on something, and then that's what you'll hear in the whole background.
That's okay. It'll be like ASMR, dog version.
Yeah, ASMR. So what did you research?
So the theme of this was like holiday, and I was like, I can either find Christmas massacres, which seemed really dark,
mm-hmm.
or like something to do with family. And so I found the Bloody Benders, which I want to say like Peaky Blinders, like the Bloody fucking Benders.
Yeah.
it's America's first serial killer family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like all about family, really. Okay. So this takes place way back in the day. So we have to first take a look at what Kansas looked like back in the 1800s. The story officially begins in the 1870s, like 1871, about 5 years after the end of the Civil War. So during this time, prisoners began to head westward along like different trails and stuff through the Midwest into Kansas. There was a shit ton of murder, assault, other forms of violence. It all continued as men from the battlefields, who were used to the violence of the Civil War, continued basically acting like animals, like they were at war with anyone who crossed their path. So like a really great start to post-war life.
Uh-huh.
So if these individuals traveling along the trails were not confronted by road agents, the travelers also had to be concerned about Native American attacks because the travelers were intruding on land that was not theirs to take, which is a whole different problem that we won't touch on, but it just needed to be said.
Mm-hmm.
So shortly after the war ended, the U.S. government moved the Osage Indians from Labette County in southeastern Kansas to the quote-unquote new Indian territory further south in what would later become the state of Oklahoma. Oh, a side note, he found out how I say Las Vegas.
Yeah.
As I say Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
And...
Yep.
It is a point of contention, and I know Nicole's going to be cringing at Las Vegas, because she always does, but I just had to point that out as a throwback.
Vegas.
Movie. How?
Vegas.
Vegas.
Going to Vegas.
Vegas.
Gonna throw some dice. Roll some slots.
Okay, Las Vegas.
Is that a thing? That is just, anyway, I'm sorry.
Moving forward... So the vacated land that was from the Native Americans that moved south was made available to homesteaders, who for the most part were just a group of pioneers minding their own fucking business, wanting to farm the land, and they were traveling in from the east. Because of all of the violence, political unrest, post-war, and shifting of land taking place in the area of the U.S. at this time, it would be pretty easy for one to get away with, say, murder. Or a few murders. So in October of 1870, five families of spiritualists began a homestead in northwestern Labette County, Kansas. One of these families was John Bender Jr., and these two men registered 160 acres of land located adjacent the Great Osage Trail near a neighboring town called Cherryvale, which happened to be the only, there was one open road for travelers, they got land on it. So after a cabin and a barn with a corral and a well were built, a woman named Elvira, who is John Sr.'s wife, and their daughter Kate arrived in the fall of 1871. So inside of the wooden cabin, there was an area. So they built a cabin, and inside of this cabin, there was an area, and it was partitioned off with a really large canvas. It created a living area in the back for the family, in a small inn and a store in the front. They also had a sign on the front of their store, and it spelled groceries incorrectly, and it was hung above the front door, obviously advertising groceries to the travelers along the Osage Trail. So the little store carried supplies like gunpowder, food, liquor, and tobacco, along with a bunch of other things. They also offered warm meals and a place to stay for the night for travelers on the trail. Elvira and Kate also planted a 2-acre vegetable garden and allegedly an apple orchard just north of the cabin. John, whose first name allegedly was William, the older John, he spoke very little English, and the English he did speak was described as guttural and usually unintelligible. Elvira, sometimes called Elmira, she was 55 years old. She was allegedly, or she allegedly spoke little English, and she was so unfriendly and insufferable, her neighbors called her a she-devil.
Oh.
Damn. Yeah.
So there was like a whole like paragraph of my research that was her neighbors calling her bad names.
Oh. Yeah. Yikes.
So she was not a great woman. So John Bender Jr., he was around 25 years old. He was handsome with auburn hair and a mustache. He spoke English fluently with a German accent, and he was quote unquote prone to laughing aimlessly, which led many to believe that he was a half-wit. However, that's what my research said. He's like walking around laughing and whatever, and people think he's not very smart. However, we kind of know now that that may have been all an act. He may have been a lot more cunning and intelligent than he seemed. So people thought he was a Hufflepuff, but really he's a Slytherin, is what I gather from that information.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So Kate Bender, who was about 23, she was apparently attractive, well put together, spoke English with a very little accent. She also happened to be a self-proclaimed healer and psychic. She handed out flyers advertising her gifts and her abilities to cure illness. She also, this is my favorite part, conducted seances and gave lectures on spiritualism and gained notoriety by advocating for free love. So Kate's popularity became a really large attraction for the Benders Inn. She got a lot of money for it. She was also a hit with the men. She earned a lot of money through sex work in the inn for the family. So although the Benders kept to themselves, Kate and her brother regularly attended Sunday school in nearby Harmony Grove. It's weird to me that, like, older kids are at Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really weird.
Yeah.
That, isn't that, like, a child thing?
Yeah.
I guess it's different on the... What's that game called?
What?
What's the game called? The trail.
Oregon Trail.
Oregon yeah. Trail.
This reminds me of the Oregon Trail, this whole thing.
I think it's kind of weird, in though. It. She's, like, doing all the sex work. Then it's like, oh, yeah, I got Sunday school. Gotta go.
Well, you know what? You can believe in God and sex.
But just,
yeah. You can do both.
Yeah. What? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Maybe she goes, oh, God, as she's having sex. You don't know. She could be praying. She could be multitasking.
It's where she finds her most spirituality.
She could be multitasking. You don't know this. Okay, so because of the unintelligible English and the fact that they couldn't spell the word groceries, it's widely believed the Benders were German immigrants. However,
did
no
they spell
documentation.
It with a S-H?
It was like G-R-O-C-R-E-S or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not great. There was a couple vowels just took a hike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Need to buy a vowel.
Yeah, they really needed to. But there's... that was good. Well, that was really good. But there's no documentation or definitive proof of any of this family's relationship to one another or where they were born, where they were found. It's just heavily speculated that they were related or maybe not related. We don't really know. But we're going to call them, we're going to call them a family.
Yeah.
Blood isn't always family. So John Bender Sr., we didn't know where he was from. He could have been from Germany, Norway, Netherlands. According to contemporary newspapers, Elvira was born Elmira Hill Mark in the Adirondack Mountains. She married a man named Simon Mark, and she claimed to have had 12 children. She later married another man named William Stephen Griffith, and Kate was reportedly her fifth daughter. Some of the Benders' neighbors claimed that John Jr. and Kate were not brother and sister at all, but they were actually husband and wife.
Interesting.
So, I don't know if it was incest or it was just her dad happened to be named John and her man happened to be named John because it's a common name back then.
Yeah.
I don't know which way that ended up. So once their shop had been opened up, a lot of travelers had to stop in for supplies, like we said. However, a lot of these travelers were never seen again. And many of the travelers were men holding large sums of cash for settling, buying cattle, purchasing land, that type of thing. Mm. Oftentimes, you shouldn't travel with cash. Rule number one.
Yeah. Traveler's
checks.
But,
you know, that's neither here nor... Right. Neither here nor there. oftentimes, it's just my own advice to these dead people in the 1800s. But oftentimes, family and friends began retracing the footsteps of these missing men, and the trail would basically stop at what's called Big Hill Country in southeast Kansas, and there's no trace of these people after that. Also, all of these places that I'm mentioning still exist, by the way. I had to look up a map of Kansas, and it's all in the southeast corner of Kansas, right up against Oklahoma.
Okay.
So these first few missing travelers weren't a big deal. It's a dangerous area with wild animals, Native Americans attacking, sickness taking lives. So it wasn't that unheard of. However, as more time passed, the disappearances became more frequent. And by the spring of 1873, the rumor mill was flowing. Everyone was spilling the tea. And everyone was warned not to travel this trail. So when the neighboring communities started to make quote-unquote slanderous insinuations about the reported 10 people missing so far, the town decided that they needed to call a meeting, and they held it at the Harmony Grove Schoolhouse, which still exists, to see what was going on. About 75 people attended the gathering, including both of the Bender men. Of the missing, there was a really well-known physician from Independence named Dr. William H. York, who had many people questioning what happened to him because everyone knew who he was. So because of this, the group decided to search every farmstead between Big Hill Creek and Drum Creek. The Benders, however, remained silent when most of the attendees volunteered to have their premises searched. They were like, nope, we're not going to say anything. You can't come near our property. So sometime later, a guy named Billy Toll, he was a neighbor of the Benders, noticed that the Bender Inn was abandoned randomly and that their farm animals were all unfed and starting to get super skinny. So Toll reported the news to this man named Leroy F. Dick. We're all going to be 12-year-olds and laugh at that name right now. Okay.
Oh, Leroy Dick.
Oh, Dick. You know, it reminds me of the mirror scene with Paul Rudd. You gonna take that, Dick. You gonna take it. You gonna take that dick. I had to do it. Okay. So, Leroy F. Dick, the township trustee, always trust the dick, and a search party was soon formed. So sorry. Sorry about who I am. are our giggles out?
Okay,
our giggles are out of the name Dick. I'm going to have to say it a few times.
Okay.
Okay. So, Toll reported the news to Leroy F. Dick, the township trustee, and a search party was soon formed, which included Dr. York's brother, Colonel A.M. York. When the men arrived at the property, they found the Bender's cabin completely empty of food, clothing, any personal possessions, and there was like this nasty, putrid, rancid smell just encompassing the entire place. So they kind of poked around and found a trap door that was nailed shut underneath, like they had a table in there, and there was the cabin floor, that's the trap door that was nailed shut. So they pried it open, and the men found a 6-foot-deep hole filled with the source of the smell. It was clotted blood.
Ew.
However, I know, fucking gross, right? However, here's the thing. No bodies were discovered there or around the foundation of the home. Like, they dug in this hole, they dug in a crawl space, they dug all around everything in the house, and there was no bodies. So as the searchers looked around, they found disturbed dirt around the garden area because the two women had a garden. And this reminds me of Dorothea Puente, the old granny girl, murderer who, you know, that one. There's an episode about it. Y'all can find it. But it was found, so they looked at the disturbed dirt in the garden area and searched there instead. And it was there that they found the first body. It was buried head downward with its feet barely covered. And the corpse was that of Dr. William H. York. His skull was bludgeoned and his throat was cut from ear to ear. So they were like, holy shit, let's continue digging. And the next day they found 9 other bodies. Many of them were dismembered. They found random body parts, including a woman and a little girl. So the burial site was christened as Hell's Half Acre. And another brother of Dr. York, a lawyer and a state senator who lived in Independence, offered a $1,000 reward for information leading to the Bender family's arrest. So on May 17th, Governor Thomas Osborne added to that amount, offering $2,000 as a reward. I needed to do the math for inflation because I was curious. A $2,000 reward now is worth $50,336.23.
It's a decent reward.
That's a stack.
Yeah.
That would pay off some debt. Yeah. So as reporters and investigators came from around the country and the story was unfolding, it was uncovered that the Benders were obviously not what they appeared. They weren't even a true family. The only ones related, it turns out, were the mom, who was called Ma, and Kate Bender. It's also worth noting that people were collecting bloody memorabilia, like blood-stained bricks and hammers from the place.
That's messed up.
Which is really weird.
Okay.
It's really kind of weird. Yep. So here's how they think they did it. So when the visitors stopped for a meal, they were seated at this table with their backs towards this really large canvas separating the inn from the living quarters. And then Kate would like butter them up, begin to charm the men, flirting with them and revealing her psychic gifts. As the men gave their full attention to Kate, Pa, which is older Bender, and the younger John Bender, hiding behind the canvas, would strike the unsuspecting traveler in the skull with a hammer, which is where the bludgeoning happened. Ma Bender and Kate would then scour the body for money and any of their, like, expensive belongings, then push the person through the trap door into the hole below the cabin. And that is where Kate would jump down there and slit the man's throat. The body would then be buried in the garden behind the house at night. So they repeated this over and over and over again, but their downfall was that murder of a father and daughter with the last name Lochner. So they found a woman and a kid, but they determined that the woman and the kid weren't related. There was a man and a daughter who were traveling.
Okay.
And so those two, the murder of those two was what ticked people off, or not ticked people off, but tipped people off.
Okay.
And ticked people off. So their last name was Lochner, and the murder of Dr. William York, which we talked about, who had initially come to actually look for the missing father and daughter. So in the winter of 1872, Mr. Lochner and his daughter left Independence, Kansas for Iowa. Never was heard from again. Cherryvale is about 11 miles east of Independence. So in the spring of 1873, Dr. York was like, yo, these people are missing. So he took it upon himself to look for the Lochners, stopping at the homestead along the trail to ask some questions. Though he reached Fort Scott completely unscathed, he circled back around to return to Independence, and he never reached home. So Dr. York had those other two brothers who offered the reward because they're like, why isn't our brother home from looking for these two missing people? So both knew of his travel plans, and when he failed to return home, that all-out search began for the missing doctor. The Benders apparently tried to help by admitting that Dr. York did stop at their place, but convinced the search party initially that he had left and was probably attacked by natives. So after Colonel York's visit and the meeting at the Harmony Grove Schoolhouse, where those 75 people showed up, the Bender family, that's when they fled. It was a few days later that the homestead was found abandoned and the search party began to discover the remains of the bodies. For all of these deaths, the Benders gained only about $4,600, which is just over $100,000 now. So I say only, but for 10 people, like,
mm-hmm.
I guess I would expect more. They got two teams of horses, a wagon, a pony, and a saddle. But because some of the travelers carried nothing of value, it's widely speculated that the Benders just kind of killed because they like to do it.
Yeah.
As word of the gruesome, which is gross.
Yeah.
You know, don't lure people in by seances. That's mean.
That's mean.
Like, that's not okay. Seances are spiritual. Like, you're there to learn something, not get murdered. But as word of the murder spread, more and more travelers came forward to tell their own stories of escaping them, including one man named William Pickering. So he refused to sit up with his back towards that canvas because apparently it had, like, disgusting stains on it.
Oh.
Pickering said, which is probably blood. And yeah. Which is fucking gross. Pickering said that Kate Bender threatened him with a knife, so he, like, busted ass and got out of there. And then there was a Catholic priest who definitely says, oh, God, in bed, and said that he fled when he saw one of the Bender men concealing a large hammer.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I just picture, like, a Catholic priest in, like, all black in, like, the white tie,
yeah.
You know, just, like, fucking busting ass getting out of there. I don't know why that's so funny to me. But after following fresh wagon tracks, the search party found the Benders had gone to this town called Thayer, about 12 miles north, and they bought tickets to Humboldt, Kansas on the northbound train. A couple days after that, the Benders' team and wagon were found a short distance away, and the horses were, like, emaciated and starved.
Aww.
So Ma and Dad went up there. John Jr. and Kate left Chanute, Kansas, and took a train south to the Red River near Denison, Texas. And that was the end of the railroad back then. Like, you couldn't go any further. So allegedly, the pair fled to a quote-unquote tough outlaw colony. I feel like a douchebag saying that.
Yeah.
tough outlaw colony. I just feel like a jackass saying that. So I want to say those are not my words on the record. The word outlaw, I can't handle. But anyway, so they went to a tough outlaw colony along the border of Texas and New Mexico. And then Ma and Pa Bender continued the train north. And then it was believed they transferred to another train to St. Louis. So there were a lot of rumors at this time of groups of individuals catching the Benders because this was, like, national news at this point. However, it was never confirmed. None of their bodies were ever found at this, or none of their bodies were found at this point, and nobody could definitively say, like, yeah, we have the Benders. So for years, sightings of Ma Bender and Kate were reported because they were the only ones that were actually relatives. In 1889, two women were extradited from Michigan on charges as they shared the same exact names. The pair were jailed, but the case was dropped because there was a lack of evidence. It's heavily speculated that Pa Bender committed suicide in 1884 on Lake Michigan. However, others believe that Ma and Kate murdered him and fled with all, murdered him because they think he fled with all of the valuables and cash taken from the victims. Here's the thing. Ma Bender was rumored to have married a few times and killed a few times all of her husbands. So it's really possible that that Pa was just, like, another murder for her to get money.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
So she really is as awful. She's mm-hmm. really is as awful as she sounds, to be completely honest with you. So though the stories of what happened to the Benders post-murder spree can only be speculated, it's difficult to nail down the accuracy. The fact that 10 bodies were found on the property has never been disputed. And other bodies were found in the area along with other disappearances. The community back then believes that there were at least 20 victims of the Bender family. So in 1961, there was a Bender Museum created in Cherryvale. It's the only museum created for a family that murdered people.
Yeah, I'm like, what? What?
I'm going to go on the record. That sounds kind of awesome. I don't know why, but...
It's really weird because it's such a small town.
Yeah, you know? Like, that's their claim to fame.
Is that, and then the locals didn't like that, so it doesn't exist anymore. Well, it kind of does, but not. But so, yeah, that museum was created in 1961. It was active and up and running until 1978 when it was, I don't know if it was closed or demolished. Either way, the grounds were turned into a fire station that was put there instead. But in the museum, hammers likely from the murders were gifted by the Dick family.
No way.
Yeah. Always comes back around to dick.
What a dick move.
They have a long history of being generous.
What a dick move. There. That was good. That was solid. Get it. Okay. So to this day, artifacts including the hammers, photos, and newspaper clippings that were placed in the Cherryvale Museum, that all can now be seen at the other Cherryvale Museum at 215 East 4th Street. So many believe that the firehouse in the museum is now haunted by Kate because it was determined that she was actually the one to do the killing. Like, she lured everyone in, jumped down there, slit the throats, all the things. So in 2020, the land that the Bender home was on was purchased by a man named Bob Miller from Independence, Kansas, and he announced that he would attempt to unravel some of the mysteries surrounding the Benders.
Ooh.
I know. I hope there's like a Travel Channel show about them. Just like there is about Skinwalker Ranch. Or I guess that's A&E, but...
Honey, I kind of feel like we need to check out this museum.
I mean, we can. It's in Kansas.
I would love to... I mean, the idea of Kansas kind of sucks. There's not a whole lot there.
It's a very small museum. It's very, very tiny. It's not... It literally, you'd go there and you'd be like... You'd walk in and you'd look around and go, oh...
But I would walk love
out.
That.
And then walk out. You would. You like small things like that.
I do. Like,
I will look up pictures on the internet of it and be satisfied.
Okay.
But if we...
I want to see if we can feel the spirit.
Feel the spirit of Kate Bender.
So total sidetrack here. Am I allowed to sidetrack?
Yeah.
Is that within bound?
So, yeah, that's what we do.
I don't know how much you guys know about this, but I used to play in what's called a psychobilly band, where it's like rockabilly music, like from the 50s with like a stand-up bass, but all of our songs were about murder and like horror punk. So the fact that there is a museum and this stuff is just like really gnarly and crazy, it's like bringing out that side of me where it's just like, this needs to be a really fast, upbeat song.
We need to make a song. We have a band called Anal Heat.
It's thrash.
It's thrash metal. We once thought of the name, band name Anal Heat. Sometimes we'll think of like band of song names. You know, maybe we do a one called Bender Over.
Oh my god.
Oh, slow clap. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I will be here all week. Thank you. Thank you. So yeah, that's the Bloody Benders. The Bloody Benders.
I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
One, I don't think that the one lady was actually psychic.
Oh yeah, for sure. No.
She was a scammer.
Oh yeah, for sure. Good at it too.
And secondly, there's a character in The Breakfast Club named John Bender.
There is.
Yeah. He's like the bad boy.
Yeah, he is. Huh. Okay. So I never put two and two together. No. Good job. Good call out on that. Are you ready for your stories?
Yeah, I totally am. Okay, I have to get comfortable first. All right, here's what I got for you guys. So,
okay,
it's like a top 10 list, but they're really in no specific order.
Who was the late night show who used to do top 10s? Is that Letterman?
I think it might have been. Was it? I don't know.
Do you remember?
I can't stay up that late.
That makes me feel old.
Right?
I'm 33. I'm not that old, but I do remember that moment in time.
Yeah, for sure. Top 10 countdown.
I think it was Letterman. Anyway, proceed.
Yeah, so this is a weird or strange or notable Christmas crimes.
Okay, let's do it. So? Roll out the barrel.
All right. All right, so the first one I have for you. Also, if you remember Stranglers, I like to write mine out on paper, so you're going to hear page turning, like the olden days.
I like that about you.
So the first one I have for you is out of Charleston, South Carolina, in December of 2013. A woman named Helen Williams, 44 years old, beat and stabbed her husband with a ceramic squirrel. When he returned home on Christmas Eve without beer. That's the reason.
Are we sure this didn't occur in the Midwest?
Are we sure? I mean, was she already drunk? Do we know?
Maybe. She just wanted to, like, continue the vibe.
She really... She wanted to continue the buzz.
Yeah.
The Miller High Life wasn't provided.
Right.
She really... She beat him with a squirrel. I can't say the blamer.
Yes. Says the police report states that when officers arrived, the man was covered in blood, and she told investigators that he fell and cut himself. And also, she could not explain why her hands and clothes were also bloody.
Is there a picture of the squirrel?
No.
Damn it.
The husband's side of the story is that Helen was angry when he returned with no beer due to the stores being closed on Christmas Eve. So she grabbed the ceramic squirrel, and beat him in the head with it. And then...
Wait, he survived?
Yeah. And then when it broke, she stabbed him in the shoulder and chest with the broken pieces. She was charged with domestic violence and spent Christmas in the slammer.
She just got a domestic charge? She
right, not get, attempted like, murder.
Attempted murder? Or at least easy. Like a attempted manslaughter or something. Jeez.
Yeah.
She did get off easy.
For real. All right. So this one does not happen on Christmas, but is Christmas adjacent.
Okay.
February 2010, a 23-year-old man named Sean Chanel became stuck in a chimney of a house that he was attempting to burglarize, earning him the nickname the Santa Claus Burglar. A few details of note in this case. He was stuck in the chimney for 6 hours when a neighbor heard his calls for help. It's a long time. It's like a work day.
That is a work day.
Right.
Where were the people in the house? Were they not present?
I don't know.
Present because Christmas?
Yeah. Apparently not. The fire department took 45 minutes to chisel away bricks in order to free the man, who was naked, by the way.
Yeah, he was.
For unknown reasons.
Got his shimmy on down.
His claim was that he was reaching for his backpack that his friend chucked down the chimney. The backpack in question was found propped up by the garage of the home. He received 17 months behind bars for this stunt. So.
Wow. That's a lot. I wonder if he had, because I imagine inside a chimney is really like, well, I've never been in a chimney, but I feel like it's not smooth. I bet he had cuts all over his butt cheeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like
imagine
road rash almost. Chimney burn. All right. Next one. In December of 2006, in Columbia, South Carolina, this is a good one, a 42-year-old man named David Allen Rogers was driving his truck, which was hauling a float in the town Christmas parade. He was also drinking alcohol while doing so.
Classic.
The float, representing the Steppin' Out dance studio, had many adults and children on it as passengers. Witnesses say that the float was going down the parade route in line when the driver pulled around and passed a tractor in front of them. So they're in the right? They're in this parade, and this drunk driver is driving this float, and he's just like, God damn.
Did he think there was traffic? Did he think there was colorful traffic?
Oh my God. So he passed this tractor in front of them and then sped down Main Street, ran a red light. An adult on the float called 911 as this was happening when they were on the float. Yeah. Officers were led on a chase for 3 miles before he stopped. Once he finally pulled over, he tried to attack the officer, and this man, David Allen Rogers, whose own child was on the float, by the way.
Oh my God.
He was charged with a DUI, 18 counts of kidnapping, and assaulting an officer. For all the people that were on the float.
Holy shit.
That sounds like a straight-up movie script.
That does
like
sound...
David Allen Rogers just sounds like the name of a guy you would expect to drunk drive a parade float around a tractor.
Absolutely. What state was that in?
South Carolina.
Didn't we just do North Carolina? What's with the Carolinas?
I don't know. They have some wacky stuff going on
they sure
during
should,
the holidays.
They sure as shit do.
All right, next one. November of 2011 in Vandalia, Ohio, a 44-year-old man named Terry Trent, who was high on bath salts, broke into a house and started decorating for Christmas.
Oh, yeah, he did. I love that for him.
He entered through a back door. He lit some candles on the coffee table.
Romantic.
He hung a wreath.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I saw this thing where it said... I saw this thing where it said Christmas wreaths are just tree buttholes, and I can't stop thinking about it.
Oh my God, I'm telling everyone that at work tomorrow.
I can't. Thinking about
I will
it.
Never not think that now. So thank you.
I'm gonna pee. Okay. Okay, moving on.
All right, so this bath salt guy. So he was found by the owner's 11-year-old son. The 11-year-old saw the man sitting on the couch watching TV at an unreasonable volume. His mother... I wonder what he was watching also.
I mean, I don't know.
It didn't say. His mother was next door at the neighbor's house when this man was discovered. The intruder was described as polite, saying to the child, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. I'll get my things and go."
That is like the most pure story of bath salt, like,
right,
entering I've ever heard of.
Right. Remember the bath salt?
You didn't try to eat anyone's face.
No, I was just saying, remember Florida bath salt face eating?
Yeah.
I remember when there was like nationwide panic over that becoming an epidemic of face eating.
Yeah. He must have just, like, microdosed
a little bit
bath salts or something.
Got a little bit high. Just wanted to light some candles, use a tree butthole, and, like, move on with his life.
Yeah. He's just trying to get in the holiday spirit.
That's exactly right. Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah. All right. Next one is from December of 2014. Taurus Scott and Gerard Dupree.
They sound like they're going to murder.
Gerard Dupree.
Gerard Dupree sounds like he works at a really shady car place, and he just wants to tint your windows to get some extra cash on the side.
You think so? I thought he sounded like a concierge or something.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Either way, it has to do with vehicles. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Okay, so their age... 30 and 27 years old. Okay, so these guys, they hatched a plan to steal some Christmas gifts.
Okay.
They went to a Florida Walmart, and surveillance cameras caught it all on camera. Gerard Dupree was seen clutching his chest near the exit of the Walmart to cause a distraction. While employees and concerned customers gathered around to help. One of them actually made a call to 911, which worked against them for sure.
Yeah, why would you act like you're having a heart attack and expect someone to not call 911? I mean, I guess we have seen from like the Lululemon murder and stuff that usually when someone needs help, nobody calls. However.
Yeah. Apparently people are real helpful at Florida Walmarts, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's Florida.
Yeah, so meanwhile, as all this was transpiring, and the cops are on their way, by the way, because of the 911 call, Taurus Scott is seen shoplifting a motorized child's Barbie car and a Barbie vacation house.
Oh, good for him. For his nieces. Yeah.
Yeah. So after he had left the store with the Barbie accessories, Dupree stood up and calmly left the store, left the parking lot in the same car as his thieving cohort. So
did they get in trouble?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
They definitely did. They caught up with them.
Okay, good.
For sure.
You know what I was thinking while you were saying that? It reminded me of the Sticky Bandits from the Wet Bandits and then the Sticky Bandits from Home Alone. How funny would it have been if I or you would have made your story a dramatic retelling of Home Alone? And didn't tell you that that's what it was. And at the end, I was like, and that's the story of Home Alone, but made it like really dramatic.
that is a missed opportunity. I have to admit.
That would have been great. That would have been really good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The robbery of Duncan's toy chest.
Yep, yep. Oh, that would have been good. Anyway.
All right, next one. December 2007. A life-sized ceramic baby Jesus was stolen from a nativity at a community center in Wellington, Florida. This is would be the second year in a row that the large ceramic baby Jesus in a manger was stolen from the affluent Florida town. The original ceramic figure was donated by a local merchant. It was made in Italy.
Oh, so it's worth it's worth some money.
Yeah, it was worth $1,800.
Oh, I thought it was going to be more.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, $1,800. I guess the cost range for me on a baby that's made of ceramic is really, I guess I overpriced it in my head.
To some porcelain baby
I would
Jesus
not be good at, if that were like a, what's the spin the wheel, Price of Right question, I would have really failed it.
Yeah. When the replacement Jesus was stolen for the second time in 1 year, they knew that they could not let those meddling kids get away with it a third time. So, what they did was they installed a GPS device inside the ceramic baby Jesus.
I was expecting a camera. Not
oh,
a
camera?
Yeah,
they did a GPS device. It had originally been used to track the application of mosquito spray.
Ooh.
Yeah. Around 6 a.m. one morning, village workers noticed that the baby Jesus was missing from the nativity scene, and they activated the GPS tracking.
Okay.
It led them to a house in no time. Homeowner Vania Silva let police in, where they discovered baby Jesus lying in a pile on the living room floor face down. Yeah.
Oh, poor baby Jeez.
Poor Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She stated that her 18-year-old son, Fernando, had brought home the ceramic figure to their house the night before. Her son, though, had a different story. He states that his friend, Danielle Sorrentino, aged 18, stole it and brought it to the Silva's house. Police tracked her down. She confessed to stealing the ceramic Jesus, and she was arrested at 8:15 a.m., a mere 2 hours and 15 minutes after the GPS was activated.
Wow, she...
pretty impressive.
What was she intending to do, steal it? Or not steal it,
know.
But sell it?
I don't know. Just like a prank, like, look what I did, like, when, you know, stealing street signs or something.
Yeah, oh, I have the baby Jesus. I don't know. Didn't you steal something in high school?
Excuse you?
Didn't you?
I wouldn't know what you're talking about, ma'am.
Oh, this can't go on record. We don't want...
Well, what are you talking... I just...
I think the statute of limitations is up on that heist.
You know what? Like, that era...
May
that
or
era
may not have.
...is far different from my podcast era.
Oh, yeah. Right? It's pod moment, not era.
Oh, well, I mean...
Okay, he stole something, and I can't remember what it was, but maybe one day we'll be able to tell the tale. Okay, continue.
On your deathbed.
Yeah, on your deathbed. I know I didn't say it on Perfect Stranglers, but I want everyone to know. God, what was it? I can't remember.
Honey, grab the mic.
Grab the mic. We got to do this. Oh, what was it? I can't remember.
As far as I'm concerned, nothing happened.
Oh, my God. Bree, what's the... Tell a story. I can't.
Okay. So obviously she got in trouble. She was charged with grand theft, which I looked that up to be like specific about exactly what that was.
Yeah.
It is when the item of stolen goods totals over $500.
Grand theft is over $500?
Yeah, I thought it was over like a grand. Thousand.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking grand theft auto, like at least the value of a decent running vehicle.
Apparently not. Okay. This one, sorry, this one's sad.
We knew it was coming.
Yeah. So 68-year-old professional Santa John Toomey was fired from the San Francisco Macy's that he'd been working at for over 20 years because of a complaint that was received by an adult who stood in line to sit on Santa's lap. Many adults go and sit on Santa's lap. It's nothing unusual. But it was a joke that Santa John, as he's known around Macy's, made to this older adult couple that caused the complaint. Santa John knows how to engage kids and adults of all ages, and he tailors his manner of speaking to match the age of the person he's talking to. So when he meets an adult who came to see Santa, he asks them if they've been good. And when they inevitably say yes, he says, "Gee, that's too bad."
Dirty John.
Yeah. And then he says, if you want to know how why Santa's so jolly, it's because he knows where all the naughty boys and girls live.
Oh, my God. How long ago was this again?
This was in 2010.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he says everything was going great and everyone loved his little Santa quips until this older couple came in. They didn't appreciate his jokes and they reported him. Santa John's fans were devastated when Macy's fired him for this complaint. Some people came from miles around for years and years to come and see this specific Santa because of the great experiences that they had. Santa John was quickly not rehired at Macy's, but he was hired at a bar and restaurant called Lefty O'Doul's. And
I love that.
He was paid twice the salary as Macy's with a bigger Santa throne. To wrap this one up, the sad part, the next year after he had been hired at Lefty O'Doul's, he was found dead in his hotel room that he lived in July of 2011. He died of natural causes, but his death was devastating to so many people.
Oh, well, he was a creepy old Santa.
A little bit. He seemed like a fun guy.
A little bit.
He probably fit right in at Lefty O'Doul's.
Probably did. I mean, you know, there's a line with creepy old men telling sexual jokes about being naughty. If you're going to do it, I guess you got to be Santa.
At Lefty O'Doul's.
At Lefty O'Doul's. Not at Macy's, to be clear.
That's sad.
If you're coming to Lefty O'Doul's, I mean, what do you expect?
For sure.
a strong drink and a conversation with Santa.
Yeah.
Did you see that? It was like a video of this little girl and she did not want to sit on Santa's lap. And he was like, "That's fine.
Yes.
You tell Santa no then." Like, he was like respecting her boundaries and it was awesome. I loved it.
Yes. I loved that. I love that so much.
All right.
That's a good Santa. Yeah,
it is a good Santa. Okay. So next one is December 2013 in Naples, Italy. Police arrested four alleged mafia gangsters following a classic case of extortion. The men were going around to shop owners, making them offers they couldn't refuse.
Making the offer you couldn't refuse.
They'd make the shop owners buy poinsettia plants from them for $140. But if they refused, coincidentally, their shops would turn up vandalized.
That's a lot for a poinsettia.
Yeah. They were emissaries from the, get this, mozzarella.
Like the cheese?
I mean, it's not spelled exactly the same.
But it's like close enough to question it.
I want some mozzarella sticks now.
Oh my God, can I tell you what I made the other day?
What'd you make?
I got a sun-dried tomato loaf of bread. It was like day old, so it was like 75 cents. And I cut it into like squares so that you can open it up and there are squares in it, and I put tiny mozzarella balls in it, and then I melted garlic butter with some parsley, drizzled it on there, folded it up in a tin foil and baked it for about 20 minutes so it was nice and gooey and like cheesy and garlic bready, and ate it.
That sounds really good.
No, oh, it was.
Yum.
Until my stomach was like, no, why did you do that to yourself? But it was good while it was happening. Yeah.
All right, so this mozzarella clan. So they were emissaries from this mozzarella clan. They continued this Christmas tradition for three years before being arrested. Turns out they were trying to raise funds for legal fees of jailed gang members. So, you see, it was just a misunderstanding.
Just a misunderstanding.
Can you imagine being a poor shop owner, though, for 3 years? You see them walking down, right? Like, with the poinsettias, just like, oh, God, not this shit again.
Yeah.
Just, like, I have to buy a $140 fucking plant.
Right? Wow. So, they were just fundraising, right?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. So we got the next one here, December 2009. A young couple from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, landed themselves in court after a brawl over an unappreciated Christmas gift. Randy,
was it a dildo?
No. Randy Young, age 21, gifted a Wii gaming system to her boyfriend. When he opened it, he was disappointed because he had asked for a remote control airplane.
That's not what I was expecting.
Yeah. Also, this guy's 26 years old, by the way. When he bitched about this, she started to leave, but not before her boyfriend grabbed her by the hair, and then she just turned around and hit him. Just decked him one.
Good girl.
Yeah. They were both arrested on Christmas Day and received a no-contact order. In court, the girlfriend, Randy, that's R-A-N-D-I, by the way.
Gross.
Okay. Asked that the no contact order be lifted because, quote, we just had a bad Christmas. This request was denied by the court.
Good job.
Yeah. God.
The guy's name was R-A-N-D-I.
No, that's the girl's name. The guy's name was
Heath. Girl's name. Okay. I don't like a Randy with an I. That's probably controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like often men's names are taken, or it's typically a man's name is given to a girl and they end it with like an I to make it more feminine, and I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it's 2009. Who the hell doesn't want a Wii for Christmas?
Right.
For like, real. That was such a revelation.
Right.
Really, for gaming.
That was a big deal.
We literally played a Wii on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, we did. I love Wii archery, and I'm good at it, which is probably why I like it, because I'm that person, but I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
It was really fun.
I've actually never played with a Wii.
Oh, you would love it. You really would.
I should give it a whirl one time.
It's really fun. Yeah, you should.
All right, last one. Have you ever heard of SantaCon? Like Santa convention?
I have a thing. My ex-uncle-in-law, who was fucking disgusting, he's like the last person you would ever want to be Santa. He was a trucker. He was racist. He was a homophobe. He was fucking disgusting. He was as wide as he is tall. You have to like go through this like Santa class and become a Santa. And he used to like ask me to color his beard white and his hair white. And he just stunk so bad. I would refuse. I would literally book out my day and make no money in order to avoid doing this for this man.
Oh, ew.
And he was fucking gross. He went to SantaCon. Like, I've seen pictures of him at SantaCon. Like, this is like a thing.
Yeah.
And it's fucking
in many
weird.
Different
like,
cities.
There are creepy people who are Santa. Yes. There are creepy people who are Santa. He would go to the one in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Gross. Yeah. Anyway, I just had to share that tidbit.
So this is the San Francisco SantaCon in 2014. There was a great turnout, which helped a bank robber remain anonymous. SantaCon is a San Francisco pub crawl where people dress up as Santa and take to the streets. It's been a San Fran tradition since 1994. During this event, a man dressed as Santa, obviously, entered a bank on Sutter Street around 1 p.m., handed a note to a teller, and told her that he had a gun, although no gun was seen, and he was given an undisclosed amount of cash, and he just left the bank and joined the mob of Santas in a sea of red.
That's really smart.
Out on the streets of San Francisco.
That's really smart to do.
Pictures were released to the public, and even the FBI was on the case, but as far as I can tell, to this day, it hasn't been solved.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild.
I love that. I feel like I've talked about this before, but if I could do a bank route, if I could do a bank heist and not get in trouble for it, I would totally do it. Like that, ever since I watched The Italian Job, the updated one with like Charlize Theron and stuff, I mm-hmm. want to do a bank heist. I want to see if I could plan it and execute it and get away with it. And now I feel like I could do a Mrs. Claus or something.
As your husband?
Yeah.
Please don't.
I mean, I'm not going to, but like, I want to put this on the record. that I will not be robbing banks. However, if I could.
Well, you can't now because you just said that.
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not going to do this. However. Yeah. However, I would love to try. I would love to give it a whirl. Did I ever tell you about the client that I had at Penny's who, her ex robbed banks?
What?
Oh my God. I can't believe I never told you about this. I had a client.
I don't think you did.
I had a client and she came in and she was like talking about her ex, and her ex was in prison and stuff. And she was really upset about it because she had a sick kid. And she was like, he was just trying to get money for us. And like, he's in prison now. I was like, what did he do? And so she told me that over the span of like 7 years, he would grow out a beard, grow out his hair, and he would go into a bank because all you have to do is slide a note and they have to give you the money. And then they call the bank, and then they call, like, you know, the cops or whatever.
Yeah. They have a silent alarm, yeah, or whatever.
Like the button or whatever. And he would ask for the mm-hmm. money, get the money. And it was small sums, like $1,000, a couple thousand dollars. I think the most she said, if I remember, was like 10 grand, get the money and then go. And it was to pay for her kids' medical bills. And how he did it and got away with it for so long is he would have a full beard, full mustache, like thick, and hair and stuff. And then he would do the thing and immediately shave afterwards. So they were looking for a man in his like mid to late 40s with all this hair. He was in his 20s. He just looked that much older.
Oh.
And so I was like, this has to be bullshit. And so I don't remember who was next to me, but we went to beauty school with her. She heard this woman talking about it. So when her hair was processing, we went back in the back room and looked up the name, and it would like happened.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. And I'm like, God, that's smart. Reminded me of the Santa thing.
So she just supported this. She's just like, yeah, you go rob that bank, honey.
She's like, if you know what pays for our medical bills, then do it. And I guess there must have been an understanding of like, if you get caught, at least the kid's taken care of.
Yeah. God, man. You gotta,
and that's the mental health care system in America, everyone. Thank you.
Yeah.
USA.
USA. USA. USA. It's great. But yeah. Yeah. That's one of the clients that I will never forget.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Oh, well, should we wrap this thing up?
I like how we're both
wrap Midwest. It up like a present.
We're both. That's good. I like how we both did a Midwestern. Well. See, we both said it at the same time.
Did we really? Well, I suppose.
And it's never like it's never like well. It's well. Like where it goes,
yeah,
welp,
yeah, or welp,
welp. You know what? It is a welp, but the P we just kind of like cut it short. It's not like it's yeah, like welp, yeah,
yep.
God, Midwesterners are fucking weird. It's not even moon. So, quick side note: I watched this TikTok of this guy who has a podcast in Wisconsin, and I was like, wow, that's a really thick accent. And then it clicked that it was a Wisconsin accent, and then I was like, oh. That's what I sound like. Yeah. I was like, no wonder. I get it. I understand it now. I thought he sounded so funny. And I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah.
It me.
Yeah. It me. It me. That's what he sounded like.
Fell in love with your elves.
Yep. So, hey, how was your experience doing a podcast?
This was wonderful.
Yeah.
I felt very a part of this. So thank you guys very much.
Did it meet your expectation?
It did.
Did it exceed it or just meet it?
It exceeded it.
Okay.
So the murder stuff was really cool.
I just need the. I need to know that you have a good time.
I had a great time.
Good.
I just want to go once again on the record. I feel like that's something we have to express. I don't know if it's the nature of this podcast
that you have to say on the record because there's a microphone.
I'd like it to state that I have very much enjoyed watching you interact and like have fun. It's been really great.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a lot of fun. Like, so this is interesting for him.
I mean, same.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting for him to see me do something that I enjoy. Which makes me sound pathetic. Yep. It's fine. We're fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was nice.
Yeah, this was nice. You know what almost makes me miss it, but not quite? And it has nothing to do with you and everything to do with the time commitment.
Yeah. No, for real. For real, though.
It's a lot. For context, and I think we've talked about it, there is a lot that goes into, like, setting this up and planning it and trying to find a day to do it and then doing the research and, like, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of moving pieces.
There is, and that's why this is a random one-off episode, because someone decided to make a joke because I had a microphone still. I've tried to sell this microphone. If anyone's in the market for a Blue Yeti microphone, I am still willing to sell it. It is a USB microphone. It works great. Obviously, you're hearing it now.
Yeah.
DM us.
That's the thing. I had already sold my microphone to Chelsea, so I just had to borrow it back for
oh, yeah. Well, see, that's easy. That's easy enough.
Yeah.
Why does she need a microphone?
I think she was, my sister asked her to record some, like, bedtime stories that she could listen to.
Because she's her in voice.
Earphones. Yeah. And she does, like, ASMR videos that she's kind of getting into and stuff.
Does she do that?
Tapping. Nail tapping? I don't know.
That's weird. She really does that. And like, it's not weird. It's cool, but I would never have expected it. That's a really unique thing to do.
Yeah, for real.
So are we going to do the outro where we tell people to subscribe?
Subscribe if you want.
Subscribe if you want. I mean, we still get listeners and stuff. We still show up on people's Spotify raps and stuff.
I love that. Thank you, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Stranglers, for still listening to us. We do have a fandom. That's weird. It's weird to think about.
Yeah.
When I tell people there's like 90 hours of me talking on the internet, they're like, what the fuck? I was like, I know, it sounds awful, right? Yeah. Well, Brie, this has been great.
It's been fun.
I'll probably talk to you tomorrow. Steven, do you want to say an outro?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Just happy to be here.
Happy to be here, happy to be sober. Are you going to say the whole thing?
Well, I mean, you know, happy to be here, happy to be sober.
He's sober, for if you guys didn't guess that already.
That's great. But I like that.
Okay.
Great to have you.
It is. It's good. Look at Honorary Strangler.
Ah, my heart's so full.
I'm so happy for you.
I love this. Seriously, this is great.
Aw, how sweet. He's far more sentimental than I am. I'm the mean one.
Just to throw this out there, when you kept saying benders, I'm not sure how much you've ever watched Futurama.
Oh,
all I could think about is like a robot family in Oklahoma killing people.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm sure someone else will get that connection and like think that as well.
But yeah, now I want to go to the Cherryvale Museum on like a motorcycle road trip.
I love that for you.
I think that would be fun.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you so much for joining. Thank you so much for listening. You can subscribe to our podcast or don't. There's probably not going to be any more episodes. We have an Instagram. We have a Facebook. Join it or don't. It's up to you.
Yeah.
We don't care anymore. That sounds really bad, but whatever. It is what it is. All right. Bye, Stranglers.
Bye, guys. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.